From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kansel, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, everybody. Great show for you today. We got Rachel Dratch, the very funny veteran of Saturday Night Live, coming on to play our game. That's exciting. The first public service announcement. As you may have heard, Dreamboat actor Ryan Gosling saved a young woman in New York City by pulling her away from a speeding cab. This has led to a lot of women and some men hurling themselves in front of cabs in the hope that Mr. Gosling will suddenly appear. Do not do this. Given the uncaring mathematical laws of probability, you will most likely be saved by a much less appealing actor. Somebody like Clint Howard or Jeffrey Tambor. And while these are charming character actors with a lot of skill, you don't want to owe them your life. There's little danger, though, in giving us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Lori Stoltz from Rochester, Minnesota.
A beautiful Rochester. I've been there. Oh. We have some Rochesterians here, apparently.
Wonderful.
What do you do there? Are you at the Mayo Clinic?
Well, it's known for Mayo Clinic, but I'm actually an English teacher.
Oh, you are?
I am.
I didn't realize they had teaching. I just thought it was medicine all day.
Well, they've got to learn how to speak and communicate, too, so...
Who, are we talking about doctors?
Yeah.
That would be novel. All right. That's great. My doctor indicates my problems with grunts and pointing, but all right. Welcome to the show, Lori. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column. Ms. Roxanne Roberts is here. Next, say hello to a writer for HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher. Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Hello. How are you?
Finally, it's the humorist and the author, most recently, of Alpha Better Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hello.
Hello.
Lori, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time? Carl Kansel is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize, Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Okay, I'd love that.
All right, well, here we go. Here is somebody beating back the notion that her husband is, quote, too stiff.
We'd better unzip him and let the real man out, because he is not.
This totally not stiff guy seems to have wrapped up the Republican nomination this week. Who is it?
That would be Romney.
Yeah, it would be Mitt Romney, yes. That was Ann Romney assuring the voters of America that despite what you might think, she knows if you unzip him and let him out, Mr. Romney is not stiff.
And has not been.
And America, the nation united, said, please let there be a way for us all to unhear that. Well, anyway.
I can see the attack ads now. Mitt Romney is soft.
Just leaving it right there.
Yeah.
Ask Mitt Romney why he's soft.
Did she expand on her remarks at all? I mean, did anybody ever ask her why she chose those particular words?
This is what happened. She was being interviewed by a Baltimore DJ, and he said, "Well, people say that your husband is very stiff. I mean, do you? I mean, what do you say to that?
Really?
And
I gotta go."
And that's what she said. And
Mitt, honey, I'm coming home.
Now, Romney was also anointed as the nominee, in effect, by President Obama, who for the first time attacked Romney by name. The president was criticizing the House Republican budget, and he made fun of Romney for calling that budget, quote, marvelous. Quoting the president, that's a word you don't often hear when it comes to describing a budget. It's a word you don't often hear generally, unquote. Mm-hmm. Shots fired! Mm-hmm. But is that what he's got on Romney, that he uses fancy words? Mm-hmm. The Romney campaign shot back with three examples of Mr. Obama calling things marvelous. So now we know what the big issue of the election is going to be, our favorite adjectives. Meanwhile, can we just say a word for Rick Santorum? He was horribly beaten, he's done, he's over, and he announced, well, isn't it great, it's halftime in primary season. Ooh. Problem with this metaphor, yes, fine, it's halftime, but you didn't score any points in the first half, and all the voters are heading home to beat the traffic. We're going, man.
Come on, anyone want to take a shot at me? I think the Ryan budget is scrumptious. Scrumptious. There's a word you might attack.
I'm stiff.
Yeah. Look at here.
The board.
Look at here. Wait a minute.
Laurie, for your next quote, here's a columnist with some advice for all of us this week.
Wear clean underwear.
That was James Jackson writing in the Sun-Times of Arkansas about the Supreme Court decision that allows the police to do what to anybody they want, whenever they want.
Oh, boy. I should have read the news more or listened more this week.
Go back to that zip thing. It's part of it.
Yeah, it's true. Good clue.
No, if you didn't hear about it, I'll give you the answer. It's strip search. Strip search them. Imagine you're out riding your bike, and a policeman arrests you for not having an audible bell. Well, of course they should be able to strip search you, because you might have hidden that bell in a creative place.
Right.
That actual case, the person who was arrested for not having a bell and strip searched, was one of the ones that the Supreme Court considered. And then they decided that the police can, in fact, strip search people arrested for any reason to see if they have contraband or gang tattoos. And here I'm quoting Justice Clarence Thomas, in case they're hot.
Mm.
He probably shouldn't have written that in the opinion.
No, actually, Justice Thomas, breaking years of tradition, actually read his concurring opinion from the bench. It went, hubba, hubba. The decision came from the five conservative justices. They're famously concerned as originalists with what the founders wanted. Mm. And this decision about unlimited strip search fits. As it turns out, James Madison himself liked to play a game with his friends called Find the Birthmark.
Mm. When they said unreasonable search and seizure, you know, one thing that's reasonable is sexy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sexy is always reasonable by the founders.
Do they?
But I want to point out that in making this ruling, allowing strip searches of anybody the police wants to strip search, the court sided with the Obama administration. That was their position.
Apparently, now, why does the Obama administration want everybody naked?
Well, this is why. Apparently, the White House is giving Americans a real reason to listen to the First Lady about obesity.
Mm.
Okay? So now we're going to see a lot of people in the gyms. They're going to be eating right. They're going to be saying, man, I got to get into shape for arrest season.
Well, also, it's an economic stimulus, you know? You have to go out and buy matching underwear.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want some bratty old underwear, mm-mm, you know, unmatching.
Bless you.
Honey, what are you putting the nice lingerie on? Oh, I'm going to do some breaking and entering. You know, you never know. All right, here is your last quote.
We're going rogue and infiltrating some turf for a day.
That was somebody talking about her new temporary gig guest hosting NBC's Today Show this week. Who was it?
Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, right. Yes, very good. Governor Palin was brought in by NBC to counter Katie Couric. She was guest hosting over on ABC's Good Morning America. The idea is that they're nemesis because Couric once ambushed Palin by asking her what newspaper she read. Mm. That makes Couric Voldemort to Sarah Palin's Harry Potter. Mm. And this is going to be like an arms race because once NBC put on Palin, ABC then counterattacked with Palin's natural enemy, a moose.
Mm. Who was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got along well with Whoopi, too. What I think was interesting is that she was on TV on NBC calling the media the lamestream media.
Yeah, I know.
And for the first time ever, I agreed with her.
Carl, how did Laurie do?
Laurie had two correct answers, so Laurie, you win our prize.
Well done. Thank you so much for playing, and congratulations, Laurie.
Bye-bye.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, you can always go to our website, waitwait.npr.org, or the website of our host station, wbez.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, a new theme park is going to be opening soon outside of Paris if plans go ahead, and with its rides, attractions, restaurants, and shows, it will celebrate the fun-filled world of whom?
Oh, here I was about to go down the French Revolution road.
Oh, if you went down that road, you'd find him at the end.
Robespierre.
No. Further down. Further down. Keep going.
Further down. Louis the 16th.
No. Come back the other way.
Napoleon.
Napoleon. Yes.
All right.
Make a left at Versailles.
It's a theme park based on Napoleon. Says the emperor's descendant, Charles Napoleon, quote, in the 21st century, people need a new medium for history, and that medium is the theme park.
And you have to be this tall to ride rides.
In a tribute to the emperor, you can't be any taller.
If only I were still 4 feet tall, I could get on that one.
The theme park will be named Napoleon's Bivouac, also known as the Repressive Kingdom. And it will honor the great emperor with rides, battle reenactments, and the brutal March on Moscow ride. Mm. That's just a walk-in freezer you stand in for 18 months while you try to eat a dead horse.
Don't miss the Waterloo slide.
Oh, it's terrible. The creators promise no French child will go home without a big satisfied scowl on their face.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Roxanne Roberts, and Adam Felber. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Thank you all so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, this is Jamaica Jones from Jackson Heights, Queens.
Jamaica Jones from Jackson Heights?
Yes.
You sound like a terrific fictional character.
I've heard that.
You sound like the heroine in an urban adventure movie.
It's not true.
No?
No, sadly.
What is the truth, Jamaica Jones?
The truth is I really don't fit the name.
What are you wearing?
Jamaica, it's good to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jamaica's topic?
Plants. They're just like us.
Just because they're silent and stationary and are plants doesn't mean the plants don't have feelings. In fact, our panelists are going to tell you about three remarkable new studies proving plants are surprisingly like humans in a particular way. Guess that true story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Ready.
Let's hear first from Adam Felber.
There are a lot of things that humans can get that trees don't. Trees don't get rabies. Trees don't get jokes. You can trust me on that one. But it turns out that trees do get jet lag. According to researchers from the University of Western Sydney, if you flew a tree across several time zones, it would suffer some familiar symptoms. Its rhythms would be off. It would still be on yesterday's schedule and its carbon cycle. And it might groggily buy souvenirs that it doesn't really want. Now, obviously, trees don't move, no matter what you might hear from adorably delusional farm girls from Kansas. And forests don't move, no matter what you might hear from certain delusional Scottish kings. But if they did, well, according to Dr. Victor Resco de Dios, if you could move a whole forest from Sydney to Barcelona, all of the trees, in fact, the whole ecosystem, would likely have the plant equivalent of jet lag. Dr. De Dios and his team say that their study could actually prove very useful for their work in the increasingly important field of advanced dinner party factoids.
Plants with jet lag. Your next story of plants acting like people comes from Roy Blunt Jr.
Houseplants get bored. That's the conclusion reached by Amanda Fleece, a forensic botanist at the University of Rochester, after she lost patience with a droopy ficus in her apartment. It had been a reasonably happy plant before, she told the Rochester Herald-Leader this week, but it wilted, and none of the kind attention I lavished on it made a difference. So I yelled at it, "You're a plant! What in the hell do you want from me, blood?" I could actually see that ficus perk up on the spot, so I mooned it. It perked up further. Over the next several days, Fleece sang bawdy songs to the ficus, decked it in Christmas tree tinsel, and threatened to send it away to military school. Soon it had doubled in size. Wouldn't you get down, says Fleece, if you stood around all day in a pot? Not just ficuses. I call my Chef Lara the Countess. All my house plants are flourishing now that I'm putting some drama in their lives.
House plants can get bored and react to drama. Just like us, your last story of our leafy green cousins comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Edward Williamson spent 10 years studying a perplexing problem: why some climbing roses cluster together, killing off surrounding flowers. It was his granddaughter who gave it a name, the Mean Girls Syndrome. In a paper delivered to the British Rose Enthusiasts Biennial Conference last month, Williamson explained how prettier roses band together, entwining stems and leaves to maximize their attractiveness and exposure to bees. Nearby flowers are not only excluded, but the popular clusters actually push other blooms to the side, restricting their sunlight and chances for pollination, creating, yes, wallflowers. It's just like those nasty teenage girls on television, Williamson told the conference audience. After experimenting with food, temperature, light, and other variables, he said the only effective remedy is to behead the cluster's central rose. Works every time, he said. The other roses back off quickly after that.
All right. So, here's the question for you. Scientists have determined that plants act like humans in a particular way. Is it from Adam Felber that they can get jet lag? Is it from Roy Blunt Jr. that they can get bored? Or from Roxanne Roberts is that they can be cutting and mean like Mean Girls? Which of these is the real story?
You know, I'm feeling pretty confident about this one. I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with Adam's story of jet lag in plants.
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, we spoke to an expert to explain this to us.
So that circadian rhythm that trees can exhibit is very similar to sort of a jet lag process that people might exhibit.
That was Keona Ogle, professor at Arizona State University and co-author of the study on jet lag trees.
Sounding very much like you.
I know. All right. You were correct. You picked Adam's story. It was the true one. You earned a point for him, and you won Carl's voice on your voicemail. Well done.
Fantastic.
Congratulations. Can I ask before you go, how did you get the name Jamaica Jones?
Yes. Everybody wants like a very romantic answer to that story. I call it a case of naming under the influence. I was named in a, from what I understand, was a stoned moment on the beach in Santa Cruz.
Ooh, that would explain it.
Yeah, I was named after a stranger's dog.
You're what?
See, now that actually gets interesting.
A stranger walked by with a dog named Jamaica, and your parents are like, there you go.
That's the story.
Wow.
Yeah, you, sorry to disappoint
you. You came within like 30 seconds of being named Snoopy. Thank you so much for being with us. Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
And now the game where we ask interesting people about things that do not interest them. Rachel Dratch was one of the stars of Saturday Night Live from 1999 to 2006. She was hilarious and great and funny, and then she left the show. And what happened then? Well, Rachel got so tired of answering that question, she wrote a whole book about it. She joins us now. Rachel Dratch, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
So, I want to talk to you about Saturday Night Live. You were on the show. You were hilarious and great. And you, among many other things, you had the most expressive and comedic face I think I've ever seen. You could get laughs just with a facial expression. I mean, like there's a sketch you do where you're eating a chocolate dessert that is remarkable.
Chocolate Vesuvius.
The chocolate Vesuvius, which is pretty crazy. Is that something you learned when you were like growing as a comedian to do like just?
No, I think that's just like a. It's just a natural thing. It's weird to talk about facial expressions, but I'm not even there, so it's just my voice.
Here, do a funny one for us now. We'll see if you can tell.
Hilarious.
Let me ask you about some of the characters you did on the show. I loved Denise, your Bostonian, because I spent some time in Boston.
You. Yeah.
And one of your characters was Debbie Downer.
Yeah, that's like what I get the most. People come up to me and they're like, oh, my boss is like that, or my sister's like that, or whatever. But yeah, we cracked up so hard in that initial scene that I think that like is etched in people's minds.
Let me ask you about, you talk in your book about the difficulty you've had getting cast.
Yeah.
in roles
since Saturday Night Live. Oh yeah.
You say you only roles you get called for are secretaries, lesbians, and secretaries who are lesbians.
Exactly. Well, that's very true.
So what?
I mean, it was. I don't know what it is, but it's like it was almost like a joke. Like every script that would come my way, which by the way, don't get me wrong, like it was like once every 3 months or something, but like it was always a lesbian, often obese, and usually over the age of 60. Like I don't know what it was. That is how I'm seen in Hollywood, I guess.
How does that work? Because you are neither a lesbian, obese, or over 60.
I know. I'm not quite sure, but that's just how. Whatever. I don't know. I don't know. It's kind of a mystery to me, but. After a while, I just kind of gave up trying to figure it out. I'm like definitely a character part. I play a lot of like low status people, so I don't know. Maybe right. Like, I'm used, like, you know, I say this in the book. I sort of thought like, oh, maybe I play the wacky friend, but I discovered like I'm a little too odd to even be the wacky friend. So that's why I'm like just, instead I'm like the weird secretary, which yeah. I'm actually like I'm Wait fine a minute. With that. I'm fine with the lesbian thing. I'm not into like playing someone who's like 65 and obese. If that's not what I think I look like, but whatever.
Hey, it's a stretch. Come on.
Maybe you should do a one-woman show in which you are an older, obese, lesbian secretary.
Yeah, you know what? That's actually a pretty good idea. Beat them at their own game. Yeah.
Exactly. You say your new book, Girl Walks Into a Bar, as a memoir. It's based on questions people kept asking you in the street after you left SNL. So what were some of those questions?
Well, actually, that's kind of a small part of the book. It actually started because I wasn't really getting any jobs after SNL, so I had all this time on my hands. I thought, maybe I should write up, if something funny happens to me, I should write it up as a little story. And so then I had this little stack of stories, and then eventually I got a crazy sort of life plot twist that provided a twist for the whole book. But the initial stories were kind of like, you know, bad dates and stuff I was doing instead of acting. And but then about a year later, at almost age 44, I, by surprise, got pregnant. And so then that provided a whole kind of direction for the...
When you say by surprise...
By surprise, I knew I was...
Do you have any idea how that happened, or did it? In your book, you talk a lot about the dates you went on. Can you tell us about some of them?
Yeah. So, one guy just blew me off really hard, and he said he was also really into eating horse meat. That's a sidebar.
Wait a minute. He blew you off and told you, says, "I don't want to see you anymore. I'm going to be busy eating a horse."
No.
What?
He was really into horse meat. Then later he blew me off.
Oh.
So yeah. Anyway.
So he thought the horse meat was a selling point.
Exactly.
So anyway, so that was guy number one.
I don't know if the dates are really like worth going into.
Oh, they are. All right. So already you had the rude horse meat guy. Who was next?
Second guy was this is kind of typical, but he was gay. And then the third guy.
How did you find out he was gay?
And give us time to make a horse meat joke here.
All right. Well, don't worry. All right. So you find out he's all right, that's not good. I'm sure he's very nice otherwise. But then the third guy.
Third guy had a baby. and I guess Jim wasn't really asking out, but I thought he was. And then I found out he really wasn't at all. You know.
Those are terrible dates.
Mm-hmm. That really is a high incidence, a high ratio of pregnancy to. Dating,
yeah. Well, wait a minute. I think we need to go back to that because you had these three disastrous dates, and you ended up pregnant. And I took seventh grade health. I know that there's something missing here.
Well, what's missing is the girl walks into a bar title, where then eventually I walked into a bar. By the way, it didn't happen that night because sometimes I don't know people
think. Oh, I see. So you don't want to say that you didn't walk in the bar and had a baby that night.
I didn't get pregnant when I walked in the bar.
All right.
But I started dating this guy long distance for 6 months, and then I found out I was pregnant. And it was quite a crazy scenario.
You got pregnant long distance?
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the most amazing part. That's the crazy part.
I am, from now on, I am totally using a headset. I am not holding the phone up to my ear if that's a danger.
Yeah.
And I've never been successful in meeting anybody romantically in a bar my whole life. And I
well, me neither. That's why I don't want to give anyone hope. Because,
all right.
I mean,
but I'm curious. You mean you clearly are not, as what they say, a playa.
No.
I'm curious as to what you did to meet apparently a very nice guy. You wanted to keep around in the bar.
I don't know. I mean, I can't give advice on this.
Really? Because there are a lot of listeners who probably would like to, you know, meet somebody and get them pregnant long distance and have that power. You can't help?
Was it a landline or a...
Well, Rachel Dratch, we're delighted to have you with us. And we've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
Let's Rearrange Those Deck Chairs.
This month marks the 100th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. So we thought we'd ask you three questions about the James Cameron movie, which inspired that historical tragedy. Answer two right, you'll win our prize for our listeners, Carl's voice on their voicemail. Carl, who is Rachel Dratch playing for?
Rachel is playing for Carla Schuster of Marietta, Georgia.
First question. Okay. According to James Horner, the film's composer, an early rough cut of the movie that he got to see was different from the final film. How? Was it A, the whole Leo and Kate romance was a subplot to the main story about the adventures of spunky Kathy Bates on the ship? B, the movie was 36 hours long? Or C, at the end, the whole thing turned out to be a dream?
Oh. All right, I'm going to guess A.
You're going to guess A, that the Leo and Kate romance was initially a subplot in the rough cut?
That sounds like a really bad guess, doesn't it? But the other two, I can't imagine those either.
Well, think about them.
Yeah, the whole thing being a dream. I mean, the boat then wakes up in bed with Suzanne Plachet.
You're not going to believe this, it says.
And the second one was that it's 36 hours long, the rough cut?
Yes.
I'm going to go with A. I don't know. That was my
You're going to go with A. Well, it was, in fact, B. The rough cut was 36 hours long.
Oh, that was my second choice.
I know. According to James Horner.
Okay.
But 14 hours of that was just Celine Dion singing, so. Next question. Star Kate Winslet was interviewed recently on the occasion of the 100th anniversary of the sinking, and she says she has a problem with the movie. What? She says, A, whenever she hears the film's love theme, My Heart Will Go On, by Celine Dion, she feels like, quote, barfing. B, she says years later, she still can't take a bath without suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. Or C, now that she's older and been around a bit, she says she thinks her character should have stayed with Billy Zane because he was stable and had a good income.
This one is A, because I think I heard her say that.
You're right, it was A. She says she cannot stand the song, My Heart Will Go On.
Yeah.
She says people play the song for her all the time, and she says, quote, I just have to sit there, you know, kind of straight-faced with a massive internal eye roll.
Yeah.
All right, this is good. You're one for two with one to go. Get this one right, you'll win. For the re-release in 3D, James Cameron, despite his temptation to mess with it, says he's changed only one detail in the movie. Which is it? A, he changed the stars in the sky above the ship to make them astronomically accurate. B, instead of Celine Dion singing My Heart Will Go On, now in the credits you hear Katy Perry's Hot and Cold. Or C, instead of throwing the priceless diamond into the ocean at the very end, the old rose clutches it to her chest and shouts, Mine! Mine!
Okay, this must be A, the constellation.
Yes, you're right. He did do that. Cameron says he was responding to a complaint from the astronomer Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he changed the stars to what would have been really visible on that date from the North Atlantic.
Wow.
Yeah, Carl, how did Rachel do?
Rachel had two correct answers, Peter, so that means she wins for Carla Schuster.
Well done, Rachel. Congratulations.
Wow, I'm excited. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to have you. Rachel Dratch is a veteran of Saturday Night Live and author of the new book, A Girl Walks Into a Bar, Comedy Calamities, Dating Disasters, and a Midlife Miracle. Rachel Dratch, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Adam Felber, Roy Blunt Jr., and Roxanne Roberts. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thanks, Carl. In just a minute, Carl loads his rhymester baskets with limerick eggs. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some questions for you from the week's news. Adam, a new e-book, from Politico suggests that during his ill-fated presidential campaign, Texas Governor Rick Perry was taking painkillers for a sore back. It may explain why one rival campaign aide found the governor doing what one day?
Giggling. Give me a hint.
Well, some men experience a little stage fright in these situations, so it helps to concentrate on something else to relax.
They...
I don't know.
They witnessed him on his cell phone whilst relieving himself?
Close. Did anybody see this?
No.
No, I'll tell you what. Apparently, Governor Perry was witnessed singing "I've Been Working on the Railroad" really loudly while using a urinal.
So what was he using the urinal for?
He was trying to talk into it. Hello down there! The book says that because of his bad back, Governor Perry was constantly taking painkillers that might have affected his mental acuity.
I was alleging that all summer.
And yet,
spuriously, and nobody was listening.
An aide for another campaign was in the men's room in New Hampshire when Perry walked in, started to use the adjoining urinal, standing, quote, companionably close, unquote, and started singing loudly, "I've been working on the railroad." And he did the whole thing. It wasn't like, you know, he started humming. He knew all the lyrics.
Dinah, what you blow?
Maybe that aide's name was Dinah.
Yeah. Possibly. Oh, God. yeah. The book's revelation that he was on painkillers the whole time isn't so much a, quote, revelation as it is a, quote, only possible explanation for the entire campaign.
Anybody else want flapjacks?
What? You're just going to do random Rick Perry things
that Rick Perry might say at a urinal if he was distracted by drugs, yes. That is, I will spend the whole night doing that if allowed.
How do you make it talk?
Anybody remember that band Mr. Mister? That was two guys, right? Why did they call it horseradish? Horseradish, funny word.
Roxanne, a recent survey of smartphone users found wealthy people download half as many apps as everyone else. Why?
It's not because they have a life, right?
Yes. That is exactly what it is.
Because they're too busy?
They have better things to do. Ah. It's been proven... It's been proven that most people use their phones for games and social networking. According to a real thing called the Luxury Institute, though, people who earn over $100,000 a year.
I like that you called it a real thing.
It is.
In order to lend some credence to this ridiculous story.
I know. It's the Luxury Institute. We're here for the study of luxury.
I question the reasoning. I think wealthy people pay other people to download their app.
They're so wealthy they can pay somebody else to waste their time.
Exactly.
I understand.
I don't have that many apps, but it's not because I'm rich. It's just because I'm not very good at this whole thing.
It also is true that the rich people tend to download different apps. So, for example, they'll play games like Words with Trumps, draw something really expensive.
Angry Surfs.
Adam, fans of James Bond are up in arms at news that in the new Bond movie, Skyfall, the super spy will for the first time be seen on the screen doing what?
Drinking a beer.
Yes, exactly. According to Advertising Age magazine, thanks to a big product placement deal, James Bond will be trading his classic shaken not stirred martini for a Heineken in at least one scene in the next movie.
Oh.
It's true. It's like...
I don't usually drink beer, but when I do...
But they'll work it into the plot. You know, Q will help him out. James, this is a bottle opener with a built-in microchip that plays Rock You Like a Hurricane whenever you open a Blisky. 007, with this special hat, you can hold two beers without the use of your hands and still drink them.
Fascinating, Jewel. We've developed this foam cylinder in which you can put a can.
Do you think is a black tie version of a beer hat.
No, except his tuxedo is just printed on a T-shirt now. You know. We're looking forward to seeing him sidle up to the bar in his tuxedo T-shirt. Mm-hmm. He's going to order a brew. And then, you know, with that sophisticated James Bond air, he's going to smash the can against his head. And then somebody will ask him his name and he'll burp it.
It's also going to be Jimmy Bond now. Bond. Jimmy Bond. What are you looking at?
I'm not even sure that's my hand.
I love how we're also offended that the Bond movies might turn tacky.
Yeah, what happened to the classy days like Octopussy? I mean, honestly.
Goldfinger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch. Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and also check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian explain how to talk to an alligator. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Ooh. Tell Me.
Hi, Peter. This is Jim Garrison from Chesapeake, Virginia.
Hey, nice to talk to you, Jim. What do you do there in Chesapeake?
Well, I'm a retail store manager for a local swimming pool company.
Oh, so you sell all those cool swimming pool stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you specialize in, like, noodles, floats, and other games?
Yeah, the fun stuff. Exactly. Right.
What's, like, the next fun thing you can do in your pool?
Oh, you know, that's a good question. Get the family together and have a good time.
How do you sell that, though? Jim, welcome to our show. Carl Castle will now read for you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a big winner. Ready to go?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Here's your first one.
Simple etiquette just might preclude a bird-like transmittal of food. But mothers know best. We help tots digest by serving them bites we've
chewed.
Yes. Yes, chewed. Actress Alicia Silverstone got a lot of attention recently when she posted a video of herself pre-chewing her child's food. They say it's a new trend among the insufferable. They claim it's a more natural way to feed babies, harkening back to the days when humans were raised by giant birds. How are kids going to get over this? 20 years from now, this kid is going to be, you know,
eating that way.
Yeah, he's going to take out the girl he wants to marry and say to her, "I've got a question to ask, darling, but first, would you mind softening up my steak?" All right, here's your next limerick.
My car tells me when I should brake and which steering corrections to make. A warning will shoot from the seat to my glute as the car gives my butt a firm...
Shake?
Yes! GM has developed a new vibrating seat function that alerts drivers when they're straying out of their lane. If you veer left, the left side of the seat vibrates. If you veer right, the right side vibrates. If you're driving straight and your butt still vibrates, you're sitting on your phone. Here is your last limerick.
When lost in the battle of sexes, starting over quite often perplexes. Our convention's a hit for the couples that split. All our booths are set up to help.
Exes?
Yes, exes. Very good. After a terrible divorce, what is the first thing you want to do? If you answered go to a convention center crammed with thousands of shell-shocked newly single people, then you're in luck. Ooh. Last weekend marked the first ever divorce expo in New York. Attendees browsed hundreds of stalls. That was like an O because you missed it. I understand. You're sad. Attendees browsed hundreds of stalls offering lawyers, makeover tips, cheap vodka. Shouldn't they do this before people get divorced as a deterrent? And what would they have at Married for 25 Years Expos? A booth with directions to the divorce expo?
Rebound parties.
Yes. Carl, how did Jim do in our quiz?
Well, Jim, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's great
My
to have
pleasure.
You on the show. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Roxanne Roberts both have 3 points each. Roy Blunt Jr. has 2 points.
All right. Well, Roy, you are in third place. You'll be up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. No fatalities reported after 13 tornadoes hit on Tuesday in blank.
Texas.
Right. This week, Kofi Annan told UN member states that April 12th was the firm deadline for the end of violence in blank.
Syria.
Right. In an attempt to turn the company around, search engine blank laid off 2,000 people this week.
Yahoo.
Yes. An Australian pilot was forced to make an emergency landing after discovering that, just like Samuel Jackson, he had a blank on his blank.
Snake on his blank.
Indeed. Mother of Blue Ivy and wife of Jay-Z, blank, launched a new Tumblr blog this week.
Blue Ivy. Mother of... That sounds like an oath. Mother of Blue Ivy!
Sweet mother of Blue Ivy.
Sweet mother of Blue Ivy. I don't know. I'll bet I don't know that lady.
Beyonce.
Beyonce.
Okay. Do you know who she is? On Tuesday, the
I know who she is, yeah.
All right. On Tuesday, the NFL unveiled new blanks for all 32 teams.
Uniforms.
Yes. An 87-year-old British grandmother who was charged with screaming obscenities at her neighbor admitted that she was suffering from blank.
Suffering from martinis.
No, she was suffering. She says from hydrangea rage.
Ah.
First documented case of hydrangea rage this year. Margaret Perry discovered her neighbor trimming Ms. Perry's hydrangeas, immediately fell victim to hydrangea rage.
Ooh.
Police ordered Perry to attend hydrangea management classes.
Yeah. Does Beyonce have a daughter named Hydrangea
Rage? Hydrangea Rage, Blue Ivy's sister, yes. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Roy has the lead.
Well done, Roy.
Oh, yeah.
You flipped a coin. Roxanne has elected to go last. So, Adam, you are up next. Fill in the blank. On Monday, the University of blank won its 8th men's college basketball championship.
Kentucky.
Yes. White House spokesman Jay Carney said on Thursday that the president thinks that blank, home of the Masters, should admit women.
Augusta.
Yes, Augusta National. The National Archives website crashed this week after 37 million people logged on to view information from the 1940 blank.
Census.
Right. An antivirus company warned about a new form of malware that, unlike most kinds, infects blank computers.
Mac.
Yes. Kansas man Bill Iles proved the oddsmakers right when he bought 3 Powerball tickets last week and did not win, but hours later was blank.
Struck by lightning.
Right. Mitt Romney's father, George, was the subject of a joke on an episode of the TV show blank.
CSI Miami.
Mad Men. The Florida Marlins lost to the St. Louis Cardinals in the opening day of the blank season.
Baseball.
Yes, a restaurant owner who thought he named his new Thai restaurant Welcome and See You Again in Thai was disappointed to realize he actually named it blank.
Get out.
Yes, I will give it to you. The name of the restaurant in Thai is Go Away and Don't Come Back. Fred Bennett wondered, well, he never saw any Thai customers in his restaurant, but it turns out when he asked his Thai chef, how do you spell welcome and see you again in Thai, the chef provided them the translation for go away and don't come back. Bennett had a new sign made. This time he asked his new chef how to write the words. And so the restaurant is now called My God, This Guy Is Easy to Fool. So, Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Adam has taken the lead.
Well done. All right. How many, then, does Roxanne need to win?
8 correct answers.
Oh, my goodness. Here we go, Roxanne. This is for the game. Fill in the blank. In honor of Easter, blank announced he was taking a break from his campaign.
Santorum.
Right. This week, five former New Orleans police officers were sentenced for shootings that took place in the aftermath of blank.
Hurricane Katrina.
Right. Katrina, 10 days after he received a new heart, former Vice President blank was released from the hospital.
Dick Cheney.
Right, and a new deal with NBC that will reportedly earn him $25 million a year. Blank will continue to host the Today Show.
Matt Lauer.
Right, a bank teller in Chicago foiled an attempted robbery by blank.
By sneezing.
By telling the robber, bank's closed, come back tomorrow. She left.
Clever.
The New York International Auto Show featured the prototype of a car that can blank.
Fly.
Yes, this week Google unveiled their new augmented reality blank.
Oh, those are the glasses.
Those are the glasses. Yeah. The Masters Tournament admitted a man this week, even though he claimed his tickets were blank.
Eaten by his dog.
Yes. Russ Berkman's dog, Sierra, ate all four of his tickets to Wednesday's practice round, but Berkman was not fazed. He quickly made Sierra barf up the tickets.
Oh.
I don't know how. He then pieced them together like a soggy, disgusting puzzle, photographed the result, and sent it to the Masters organizers, who agreed to let him in as long as he wasn't a woman. You can go watch the tournament if you're a woman.
And bring your dog. Come on.
All right. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
Well, she needed at least seven to tie, and she had seven correct answers, Peter. So this week, Roxanne Roberts and Adam Felber are co-champions.
Well done. But, yeah. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict, now that they've sanctioned strip searches for traffic stops, what will be the next surprising Supreme Court ruling. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Pimsleur language programs, providing tools to learn a listener limerick challenge in 45 languages, online at pimsleur.com. Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents, information available at progressive.com, and to the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks, our house manager is Don Hall, our assistant house manager is Jessica McLeod, our intern is good old Kate Casey, our web guru is Beth Novi, engineers include Lester Larchick and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank, BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical directions from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will the next shocking Supreme Court ruling be? Adam Felber.
They're going to keep that spring break momentum going, baby. Next up, mandatory universal T-shirt dousing and jello shots for all.
Roxanne Roberts.
The court will uphold random, just for fun, strip searches at the Supreme Court.
And Roy Blunt, Jr.
In order to make the whole thing more even-handed and fair, after the police strip search you will have to strip search the police.
Well, if the Supreme Court announces any of those actions and decisions, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carol Castle. Thanks also to Adam Felber, Roxanne Roberts, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We are done here. We will see you next week, Boston, Massachusetts. This is NPR.